Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, and this will be a good one, Stone.
Hey, this is going to be a lot of fun. We have a studio full this morning. Later in the program, we're going to get a chance to visit with the owner of Georgia Life Settlements, Mike. I'm not going to try to pronounce his last name right now, but we'll come back to it. Joe Lindenmeyer with TSS Photography, and we're going to get a chance to talk with Lanice Williams, Esquire, with Mompreneur. And she's going to share some info with us about the She Means Business Networking event. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio this afternoon, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce the CEO, the Grand Poobah, the Chief Mohawk, with the Intersect Group. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast Miss Rebecca Rogers T. Harerno.
Close.
Did I mess it up?
You butchered it at the end.
It was
good effort, though. You have to give him credit for it.
But before we went on air, didn't I do better?
It was much better.
All right. Yes. All right, so the rehearsal was better than the live show.
So you try it.
Rebecca Rogers Tijarino.
See, exactly. That was perfect.
It took me a lot of years to practice before the marriage actually took place, so it worked out.
So can you share a little bit about the Intersect Group? What are you guys up to?
Yeah. The Intersect Group is headquartered here in Atlanta, Georgia. It's a primary headquartered location, but we're a national firm, and we provide service to CIOs primarily and CFOs who are looking to augment their current team efforts through the use of either contingent labor, project staffing, consulting, or direct hire placement.
So this seems to be a good time to be in your business, right? There's a lot of growth in that area.
It's true. Yeah, we're having a great year. We're 25% up over last year.
Now, it seems to be one of the areas in the economy that there's like a zero unemployment or next to nothing unemployment.
It's starting to happen. Our team solely focuses in professional staffing, so mm-hmm. mainly in finance, accounting, and information technology positions. And today it is true that there are many more jobs than there are candidates.
So that's a good bit of advice for the college people out there. That's a nice area to maybe think about.
Yeah, well, you know what happened with IT years ago is with all of the offshoring that was taking place, mm-hmm. Candidates that were going into college decided it wasn't a great thing to major in. And now we have reshoring going on in the United States, so people are actively looking for high skill sets in technology that they're not able to find.
So they want the people to be back in this country rather than sending the jobs overseas?
Yeah, I think it's more of a balance than it was at one point. Mm-hmm. You know, we went through an offshoring effort for a number of years, and now what people are realizing is that either complete reshoring, meaning back into the United States, or an alternative plan of a combination utilizing local resources for technical architecture, business analysis, and project management, and then using offshore for development and quality testing is the model that we see most effective right now.
Now, if you have a client that's kind of new to this area, is that an area where they can hire you and you would have some expertise and share some best practices to help them implement that kind of strategy?
Absolutely. Generally, what we do in working with CIOs or CTOs in organizations is help them understand what it is that's on their roadmap or their plan for mm-hmm. the next couple of years. And then we look at what resources they bring to bear in their own core employee skill sets. And then we look at how we together come up with a plan to either augment their team that they have, completely outsource certain projects, or do a combination of that. And then together we figure out the most cost-effective, timely model for their organization.
And what's the pain that they're having where they're like, you know what, we got to call the Intersect Group?
Yeah, the pain ranges, but we work with companies that are either going through tremendous change, either through merger acquisition, research and development, changes in organization structure, maybe challenges related to the economy, other changes in their business that is creating an immediate need for results. And then we work with companies who are also looking at improvement. They know that things are changing all the time in their
environment. So maybe they reach a plateau and they're looking to shake things up and they don't know what to...
Exactly. Or they realize that their core skill sets of their team need to be augmented in some way.
Now, have you always been with the Intersect Group or what's your history with them?
Well, Lee, I have been here. I think this is my 13th week.
13th week?
Yeah.
You're doing a fantastic job.
Thank you so very much. Yeah.
So how did that come about?
So we're fortunate that the company has been growing significantly. It was founded in 2006, and my predecessor was in a point at in his career where he had helped the company grow since its inception and wanted to go on and do some new things and take a little bit of time off and semi-retire. So I was proactively recruited to come into the role. My background is in both staffing and consulting, so this was a
so they were practicing what they preached.
Exactly.
Yeah, your own cooking. That's great.
That's great. Yeah.
So what do you do? Like in the first few days, you know, you come in guns a blazing. You come in. I would be really interested to hear how you handled those first handful of days.
So it's a really good question, Stone. So my mantra coming in is do no harm. As I mentioned, the Intersect Group performs really well right now. We're growing significantly. We have very happy clients, and we have candidates or associates that utilize our services to help them find a job over and over. So the first thing I wanted to do was actually create no drama, right? But then in addition to that, it's my job to help facilitate success with the organization. So the first couple of weeks, and by couple I mean the first six, all I did was listen and learn. So it's just a really a process of getting hip to hip with everybody in the office and understanding what's happening in all of our markets and where there's opportunities for improvement from the employee's eyes. You know,
so you're headquartered here in Atlanta, but you have offices around the country?
We do. We have, we're headquartered here, in fact, right across the street.
Right.
But we're also located in Dallas is a primary hub for us. And then we provide services nationally out of a centralized virtual hub here in Atlanta.
So that like somebody could be in Wisconsin and then have a need and then they can just contact the Atlanta office and they would handle it.
I
guess over the phone or
Skype
or however that would work.
That's right.
So how does the sales and marketing thing work for an organization like yours? Does your phone go ring a lot and you get a lot of incoming or do you have people out there pounding the pavement or is it a little bit of a blend?
It is a blend. There's always business development activity going on as an organization and we're very active in the communities in which we serve and then nationally as well in association and trade groups. But primarily because of our good reputation, we tend to get referrals. So once we've serviced someone well, that relationship continues on to their friends and family, as we say. So if we've serviced a CIO well, oftentimes we'll get an automatic referral to someone that they know that's seeking assistance.
Or maybe even deeper in the organization, you might be working in one division and all of a sudden now you're working in five divisions.
That's exactly right.
So and what were you doing before you were with Intersect?
So I was the CEO of an IT consulting firm that was a spinoff of a large global IT staffing company. And when it spun off, it was all consulting work. And I was facilitated the spinoff of that company and a merger with another firm for several years, went through heavy transformation, and then started the path towards growth.
So your guess was off. You said she was a juggler.
Do you juggle?
Well, of course she does.
She juggles a lot of responsibility.
Maybe that's what he
My husband and children and colleagues may say I do juggle a bit. But.
So what drew you to this opportunity?
So here's the
So you were in Wisconsin. Fantastic. Or you were traveling all the time?
Yeah, traveling all the time. Still I travel all the time because we're national. So I'm on the road 4 days of every week. And then try to sleep at home two nights a week. So what drew me to the company is this beautiful blend they have of actual staffing expertise and consulting, where clients, no matter what their situation is, we have the ability to inform and help, which is fantastic because a lot of companies, whether they be really large or middle size, are looking for somebody that they can go to for thought leadership as well as service.
Right.
And if we can't do something, we say we can't, but it's that blend of being able to service them over the long haul that has been important to our clients and the intimacy that we have with them.
And then what about the decision to work with a small to mid-sized company as opposed to one of the ginormous conglomerates?
We work with both.
But you could have been running one of those. Or...
Yeah, and I have.
Right.
So my background, I worked for the world's largest staffing organization back in the day as their chief sales officer here in the United States. And enjoyed that very much. But there's something about being with a firm that's at this wonderful growth point that we are right now that is really energizing. And I've been with all different size firms, and each has its challenges. But what I love about this is there isn't an employee I don't know, which for me is...
That's important.
It's kind of home, right? It feels good every day. And, you know, I know the clients, which was the other thing that I did still in the first, you know, couple of months of the job, is to get out to many, many of our top clients and those that hadn't seen potentially a CEO in a while. I wanted to make sure I understood from the client's view what they enjoyed about working with us and also what they saw as opportunity. So it's been good.
So insight for some of us that don't do it very often, but that may have the need, particularly as our organizations grow, what kind of questions should we be asking you and the folks on your team? And what should we be looking out for? What should we make sure that we absolutely cover and or absolutely avoid?
So I always think that the most important skill for a leader is to think, you know, a year, 2, 3 years down path about where you're headed as an organization and what kind of skill sets you're going to need inside your organization and in addition to your organization, and to really create a competitive differential. So living in the moment is the death of all business. Living in the future is the opportunity that all of us as leaders are striving to achieve. So for me, when I work with an organization, I really try to do three things, which is first, to understand what is happening in their industry and the drivers of their business and what's changing. What's changing about their landscape and that they need to be aware of? What disruptive technologies are impacting their business? What's happening economically? And then from there, help inform some of their business objectives. So every CEO will have a list of business objectives that they have, but how does that translate to the function and the individual leader that we're working with? And how do you transcribe that then into the obstacles or challenges that they're having? And then really help them prescribe the futuristic view of where they need to head and the strategic initiatives and action plans that will help them, you know, achieve really good results for their business and for their employees.
So that sounds good, and it sounds like that mm-hmm. would be a noble pursuit to be able to do that. Do the other CEOs give you that kind of an opportunity to partner at that level of intimacy? Because that seems like you're now, you know, you're no longer my mm-hmm. vendor who does recruiting. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you're really trying to help my organization, and you're really kind of watching my back.
Yep. So we certainly have transactional clients that work with us every day on an order-by-order basis. But we also have strategic clients that are looking for us on a much more intimate level to understand their business and help them. And those clients we're engaged at the C-level consistently with here in Atlanta and in Dallas and other places that are looking for the opportunity to have someone that brings our ability, you know, to be our everyday in their business.
Right. And it sounds like that, I mean, I can see your face light up. That's the mm-hmm. part that mm-hmm. you like, right? Where right. you're having that deeper relationship and that you're not just a vendor, that you are somebody that's partnering with them and a kind of a trusted advisor to help them grow their business. Right. Now, to that end, it seems like you're really investing in community here locally. Like you just did an event, what was it called? Techonomy?
Yes, the Techonomy event.
So now that isn't like a typical kind of vendor type event, right? This is something that you're really trying to serve the ecosystem that serves you.
That's right. So we brought together CEOs and CIOs from the local organization, partnered with TAG, which is a local tech group and very prolific in this area, and brought in outside speakers around what is happening in technology and the disruptive nature of technology and what we all need to be prepared for. And you're right, that's not a traditional staffing company kind of thing, but it is what we do in order to make sure that we're provoking thought about where people right. need to head and what we need to do to help them grow their business.
Now, do you think you'll be doing more events like that? Was that something that you enjoyed?
Yeah, it is something we enjoyed, and I think our clients, you know, based on the feedback, very much enjoyed it. In addition to that, we sponsor a number of community-based events, whether they're charitable or elsewhere. In fact, in Dallas, we started a newsletter and sponsored it along with the Dallas Business Journal around, it's called Tech Flash, and it's a daily newsletter that's going out all around, you know, what's happening in the technology sector. So we focused a lot on technology, but we help with F&A as well, or finance and accounting. But those are the kinds of things that we feel are important to invest in the community.
So now, for you, you did this event. Is there some other upcoming events that you guys got going on coming up in 2015 or even towards the end of this year?
Yeah, we're doing that planning right now. Most of the events have winnowed down. Last week, we sponsored the Technology Ball, which was an effort.
Right. Yeah, that's a big event here.
Yeah. Tom. Yeah. Which, you know, helps benefit charities around the STEM education
right.
environment, which for me and that's, for our team is really important.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Goes
yeah.
to the core of your business, yeah. I would imagine.
Yeah. One of the things that, you know, is a platform that I feel really strongly about is ensuring that we provoke our employees to be everyday learners. Mm-hmm. And so often here in our environments, we tend to go to get our college degree and maybe our master's, and then we're kind of done.
Right.
Right? Check the
box.
I did that. It
doesn't work anymore in
this world,
right?
It doesn't work anymore at all. So the consistency around continuing education and making sure it doesn't have to be a formal education, right? It can just be picking up a book or going to a seminar or spending time with someone that knows more than you do.
How many online classes are there for free from all over the world?
That's right. That's exactly right. And that's something that we believe in as a platform for change. Mm-hmm. In the STEM environment.
And are you bullish? You like to look ahead a couple of years. Are you bullish about where things are going?
I'm really bullish about where things are going. We've had incredible growth this year. We're expecting great growth next year. We're continuing to invest in resources, both technology and human resources, to help our company grow. Additionally, I see our clients doing the same. So I am bullish on where we're headed over the next couple of years.
All right. Where can our listeners go to learn more, have a conversation with you or someone on your team about some of these topics?
So our website address is www.theintersectgroup.com, or they can find us on Google at The Intersect Group here in Atlanta or in Dallas.
And you'll be here 1 or 2 days a week?
I'm here all
a month?
The time. Yeah. So right now I'm here about 10 days a month. Mm-hmm. Work days a month, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah,
so I'm going to practice while you're on the road. Tijarino. And I'm going to get it right by the time you guys... She's nodding her head. I'm not getting
just
it right.
Just send it to him phonetically or something.
So everyone just calls me RRT. It just makes it so much easier.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you in the studio.
Thank you.
And all kidding aside, we'd love to have you back sometime. And it might be fun to come back with a client or something and talk
Absolutely.
About that relationship and... keep up the good work.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Hey, how about hanging with us while we visit with our next guest?
I'd be happy to hang out.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio this afternoon, we have with us founder with Mompreneur, Miss Lanice Williams. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So what'd you learn in that last segment?
I learned a lot. Very interesting.
Pretty sharp gal, huh?
Yes, definitely.
So you have your own event coming up, right?
Well, it's actually not my event. It's an event.
Oh,
don't be modest.
Well, it's not. I can't take credit. I'll take credit for other things, but not for this event. It's actually put on by Royal Enterprises, and I am going to be a guest speaker at the event.
And it's the She Means Business event. Is that
yes.
correct? And what's the overall purpose, mission of that event?
The purpose of the event, it goes with my whole philosophy of just supporting the female entrepreneur. It's a time for women to get together and network with one another, as well as be able to learn from some experts in some different fields on how to grow or how to launch their own business.
Now, your day job is as an attorney and consultant?
Yes, I am an IP and business attorney and a business strategist, and I'm called the entrepreneur educator.
And so that dovetails nicely with your speech, I guess, your
yes,
talk?
Yes, definitely.
And can you give us a sneak peek of that talk?
Well, I'll be talking about the business or the legal side of starting a business. I'll talk about different types of incorporating, different types of contracts that need to be in place, just the whole legal logistics side of it that many people don't think about until they're actually served with some type of petition.
Right.
So my goal is to talk about all of that, to keep people from feeling intimidated by it, to have an open conversation about it and be able to teach them more about that and branding and brand protection.
Now, you mentioned that one of your goals is to get 1,000 women entrepreneurs over the next 3 years.
Yes.
So now, why is that so important to you? And then what's your strategy to do that?
Well, it's important to me because I think we talked about that a little bit with your previous guest. I did everything the way everyone thought it should be done. I went to college. I went to law school. I started practicing law, and I just realized that I wasn't happy in what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I started finding different ways to, you know, earn money but still use my legal degree so my parents wouldn't get mad at me. But I just started finding other things to do. And I realized that entrepreneurship was truly my passion. I had my own practice. I went out there, hit the pavement, got my own practice, was making multiple six figures, truly happy at the time. But then, like I said, I became unhappy and realized that entrepreneurship was my passion. So there are a lot of people, especially women, that are going to work every day, 9 to 5, and they just don't feel that sense of fulfillment. They aren't happy. So I'm trying to reach out to as many women as I can to help them find their purpose in life and start their own business or do whatever it is that they want to do.
So you think that sometimes women think that the path is, like you said, is, you know, go to school, go to college, get a job.
Exactly.
And they're not even opening their mind to the possibility of, I can create my own job. I can do what it makes me passionate.
Exactly. Because a lot of people feel that entrepreneurship, for one, is intimidating. They don't know what to do. They don't know what their passions are. But another aspect of it is they just don't know where to go.
Mm-hmm.
So the goal is just to teach people, you know, where they can go, different resources that they can have, because there's no point in thinking that you have this stable job. There's no such thing as a stable job. You know, no offense against anyone that is committed to their 9 to 5, but you can walk in your job at on any day and they can say, hey, you know, I don't like that black business radio shirt you're wearing. You're fired. And then what do you do? So I try to encourage people to find out what your passions are. Even if you don't want to leave your 9 to 5, figure out a way to get a residual income.
Right. Even if you did it on the side, that's right. Still good, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Because you just can't depend on your employer all the time.
So I'd like to hear from your perspective, anything that you've witnessed as perceived barriers from female or would-be female entrepreneurs. And I'd like to get your perspective on, are they really there? And I'll set that up by saying, in my experience, and I've been around women a lot of my life, I married one, they're smarter, they're more collaborative, they're better with money. I mean, to me, they have a lot of advantages, at least the ones that I know. But are there a set of barriers that are either real or perceived for females that we should bring to everyone's attention, including males that have a genuine interest in really wanting to help?
Definitely. I think a lot of the barriers, they may actually be self-inflicted barriers. Barriers where women feel like, okay, I have these kids, I have this education that I don't, this degree that I don't want to do anything with anymore, or I have this husband, this family that I have to take care of. And so they create those barriers in a sense. Because there are a lot of people that want to do business with women, but if they don't put themselves out there, then people aren't able to do business with them.
So now at this event, do you know the days and where it's at?
Yes, the event is this Saturday at Terrell Woods Enterprise, which is in Decatur, and it's from 6 to 9 p.m.
And then can you share a little bit about, I know you'll be speaking there, but what else can a person expect by going to the event?
There will also be an author. Her name is Mariah Gerardo, and she will talk about how to write and publish a book. And also Simply Charessa, who is an event producer, and Renika Ann, who is a publicist. They will also be speaking about public relations and launch events and things of that
nature. Right, so they're trying to give the attendee like kind of a 360 view of what it's like.
Exactly. So it'll help them if they're an aspiring entrepreneur. It'll give them a little preview of what they can expect. Or if they want to grow their business, it'll help them with that venture as well.
So I want to talk to you a little, before you let her go, I want to talk more about this putting 1,000 women in business. Because it does seem like a big, you know, those hairy, audacious goals. But I got to tell you, I'm enamored with it. I would like very much to somehow participate in putting 1,000 women in. I think we should partner. I mean, we've actually talked about something very similar. So I do want to talk with you more
Definitely.
On and off air about doing that. I'm quite sincere about that. But while I've got you, and I've got you captive, strategies, tactics, ideas, I mean, what kind of things can we be doing right now, this quarter, this year, to make that happen?
Well, the first thing, I think your guest talked about it previously, is just setting some goals. Just thinking about what you want to accomplish, thinking not just about right now. If you want to start a business, don't just start your business small. Think big, because it's very possible that your business can be big. And if you're thinking big in the early stages, you'll be prepared when you really blow up. So I've developed a line of products and services for the female entrepreneur. On my website, I have different home study kits because in starting up, my focus is primarily on startups. So a lot of people don't have the money to invest into a business strategist or a business consultant, coach. They don't have the funds to do that because they're bootstrapping most times. They're trying to find funds to get a sign or to incorporate their business. So I've created a really low-cost alternative for that through some home study kits. So I have kits on starting your business, kits on branding, kits on branding yourself through public speaking.
Oh, fantastic.
All sorts of things, definitely. Because I, like you mentioned, that's my goal, is to launch people into entrepreneurship. So if I already know that they don't have the funds or the resources to really invest thousands of dollars into a strategist, I want to make it easily accessible for them.
Well, I'm a father of two girls, and as I mentioned, I'm married to a female, and I have a female mother. There's a lot of females in my life. And I got to tell you, Rebecca, the STEM train has already left the station at my house. So neither one of my two are going to be in STEM careers. But no, I'm invested for that reason, and because just out in the marketplace, I have people like Lanise's and Rebecca's coming in here every day, and I see that I've got bright, passionate, dedicated folks. And so, yeah, quite sincere. We need to have that conversation.
Definitely.
In the meantime, where can our listeners go to sign up for this workshop and have conversations with you, learn more about these products?
Well, they can check out the event coming up this Saturday at shemeansbusiness.eventbrite.com.
Mm-hmm.
But for more information on my products and my services, you can check me out at Lanise Williams, which is LeniseWilliams.com.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for coming down to visit. And if you can't hang out after the show today to have this conversation, let's set up some time, because I really do. I want to have that conversation.
Okay, great.
All right. Enough about me and you. Let's talk to this next guy. You going to hang with us?
I sure am.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have with us with TSS Photography, Mr. Joe. And I didn't ask how to pronounce your last name, but then you see I don't really hold to it anyway. So I'm going to let you do it.
Lindenmeyer, but you nailed it in the training.
I did. I should have just let it go. So Joe Lindenmeyer with TSS Photography. What is it, and what are you out there trying to do for folks?
Well, bottom line is, don't wear the picture day, people. So we do picture days for schools, sports, organizations, YMCAs, park and recs, all over the country for children up to generally 12 to 14 years old. But we do some corporate event and other types of photography as well.
That's park and recs, not parking recs.
That's right. That's right.
That's the first word. The first time. So gymnastics father the cheerleading and all that stuff. Do you do that kind of stuff as well then?
We do. We do. We're franchised throughout the country. We have about 220 locations in about 40 states.
All right. So you're the one that makes my kid look like Olga Corbett.
That's right. We can't help with the round off, but we can make him look pretty good.
Nicely done.
So now TSS Photography, that's a franchise?
Yes, it is, Lee. Yep.
And then are you a franchisee, franchisor? What's your relationship?
We're the franchisor. We started the company in 1983 and just celebrated our 30th anniversary a couple years ago, and have had just an exciting run through the digital conversion era and all of the mom and paparazzis with cameras. And
everybody with a phone has a camera now.
That's exactly right.
How did you have to change your business in order to kind of deal with that?
Well, I think one of your prior guests talks about the disruption model and what happens in that. And it's not an if, it's a when somebody's going to disrupt the model. And from our perspective, it really embraces good photography, because we can all take photos, but it's kind of like saying we can all make our dinner, but does it taste very good sometimes?
Right.
Subsistence photography is something that a lot of people will do just to take photos and start their own memory books and things, but to have a professionally trained photographer with custom backgrounds and good lighting, things like that, is what really separated TSS Photography over the years.
And then can you talk about the lab operations? That's a pivot, or
in fact, I think last time I was in here in 06, we were talking about some of the things that we were doing, and in a second business we launched that Lanise actually is a great proprietor for women in franchising. But I think one of the things that really separated us was being vertically integrated, having the production facility so that our franchise owners didn't have to worry about having a retail space, having to do their own photo fulfillment.
Because they could have worked out of their house if they wanted to, right?
Exactly. And that's what most of them do. About 80% of our franchise owners are home-based.
Because they're going to the school or they're going to the event to do the shooting.
You got it. Mobile photography studios is what we specialize in.
Mm-hmm. So now the lab operations part?
Yeah. So what we did, actually, this has been an exciting year. My partner and I, who he was one of the original founders, we've been together for about 23 years. We sold the company to a bigger organization back in June and moved.
You sold the franchise company?
We did. We sold the production facility and the franchise company to a company in Oklahoma, and basically, unfortunately, had to shut down our production facility here in Duluth, Georgia. Mm-hmm. But we moved it to Oklahoma, and they took over. Had great economies of scale, were about three times our size, and were able to add new technology, new products, and new services for our franchise owners.
So now you're looking for work? That's why we brought Rebecca here.
Can't hold down a job.
That's right. I'll throw Rebecca my card afterwards. I've stayed on as president of the company, and we have had, I think one of the things that we talk about, and I've helped buy and sell probably 350 businesses over the years for franchise organizations of all shapes and sizes, and selling our parent company in the franchise entity was a test that you didn't study for, but you learn a lot of lessons as you go through it.
So you've sold individual franchise, then you've sold an entire franchise.
That's right.
So is it the same process?
There's a lot of similar processes in it. One of the things we talk to our franchise owners about, and I suspect every business owner has to think about what the end is and what's going to happen in the business ultimately, whether you pass it on to your children, whether you sell it in the market or just shut it down. And from our perspective, my partner at the time had been with the organization since the beginning, and it was a great time for him to retire. He's a little bit older than I am. And as we got approached in the fall by another company looking to acquire us and add us to their arsenal, we started looking at really what was going to be the best thing for our franchise owners. Because at the end of the day, it was really all going to work out to be about the same for us as the owners, but how we could give our franchise owners a step up and really help them maintain a leading edge in the competitive environment out there was a big goal.
Now, you mentioned you're active in the whole franchising ecosystem. Can you talk a little bit about your work with the veterans? Because I know that's an important component for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as youngest of seven, five of us were in the military, and my dad was, six of us were in the military, including my dad.
Who didn't you count?
My sister and brother were either fortunate enough or smart enough. They certainly had the courage to do it, but they chose not to enlist. So it's always been an important thing for me to be involved with veteran causes, and I'm a veteran of Desert Storm. And the International Franchise Association started an initiative in 1991 after Desert Storm to help veterans get into business ownership. Mm-hmm. And it's been a cause near and dear to myself, and we started the program years and years ago at TSS and recruited a Vietnam veteran back in 1993 was our first franchise owner into it. And he's still with us to this day. But now there are over 650 franchise companies from Marriott and McDonald's to TSS Photography, Wynn Home Inspection, Sport Clips, a lot of big and small brands.
That help, or they make an effort, a special effort to involve vets, or they give them a deal, or there's some initiative to attract them?
There's a number of things. Number one, we want them to give some sort of financial incentive to the veteran to go into the business,
right,
whether it's a discounted franchise fee, sometimes a free franchise, maybe some favorable financing or site selection, some other help in getting their business launched. And then it could also involve mentorship programs, which we're very heavily involved with. Mm-hmm. Again, what some of the prior guests were talking about is just where do you go from here?
Right. Because there's a lot of that, the person's on a path, it doesn't even occur to them that they can start their own business.
No.
Right?
No, they have a lot of experience. They might be a platoon commander or a platoon sergeant or a logistics officer or someone that actually knows how to handle mega million-dollar operations,
right,
in some of these guys, and they know how to follow a system. They're very passionate and enthusiastic, and we can feed them into the right business. Then I think helping them understand what to do along the way, a good franchisor is going to do that anyway. A good franchise system is going to have things laid out in processes and manuals and things for them. But also to take it to that next step and know what it feels like to be a veteran, talk to them about some of the things that they're going through. There's a big misconception about the percentage of PTSD and traumatic brain injuries and things mm-hmm. that are out there. There certainly are some, but even some of the folks that have those can be very, very effective business
right.
owners and managers.
But if he can drive a tank and protect my freedom, I think I can trust him with this board right here.
Well, a good friend of mine, Greg Tanner, says, they were willing to take a bullet for their last employer, so
right.
I think at this point, there's nothing they can't do.
So being the youngest of seven, active military duty, do you think that impacted your journey more toward entrepreneurship? Is that part of why you went more for entrepreneurship?
You know, it's funny. I don't think that's the natural inclination. So when we started VetFran, we didn't just focus on business ownership. It was also careers in franchising, because somebody may have no desire to sign the front of the check and take on some of the debt service and things about starting a business. They may want to manage or have a career or a job, which really, when veterans come home, and there's going to be about 200,000 of them each of the next 5 years coming back out of our drawdown, their number one thing is, how do I provide for my family now?
Right.
And a job is generally the first thing they look for. But they oftentimes don't realize that there's a career path even within that. You can work your way up as a manager. And I saw a statistic the other day, and I can't quote it exactly, but a very high percentage of McDonald's franchisees started out working in the actual restaurants. Mm-hmm. So that's a good career path for folks too.
Yeah, I'm going to get ready, Rebecca. I'm going to bring you in this. We had a CIO the other day. Remember, he talked about how important it was when he was working with people, that a military background was definitely, and it helped him. He was in the military as an officer, and he had great success hiring other military people. Do you find that as well?
We do. The Intersect Group, as a part of our colleague employees, has a tremendous amount of veterans working for us, and we see particularly in mid-level, entry-level, you know, people that have great skills coming out of the military and joining the workforce, moving into leadership in positions of responsibility right out of the chute, because they bring not only the ability to learn, but great discipline, and as we've sort of talked about, the ability to do whatever it takes to get the job done. Employers love that.
That was exactly, that's a quote from him. The CIO said that specifically. He goes, this is a person that's going to do whatever it takes to get the job done.
Right.
He's not the slacker guy that I have to, you know, kind of babysit. This is a person that's going to make it happen.
Yeah, I think the commitment to team as well,
right,
understanding how to work within a team, is something that we see consistently with our military applicants over and over and over again. They're able to persevere through, you know, when you're running an IT project and it's 18 months in duration and it involves travel and a tremendous amount of change management within an organization that maybe doesn't even want that project to be successful.
Right.
You know, there are team members that are sometimes like that. The team members that we get from the military seem to have the ability to stick with it without, you know, having a tremendous amount of emotional challenge with dealing with that change management. They just,
it's not
they
overwhelming.
Know how to deal with it. Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
because no one's trying to kill them.
And
when you remove that element,
say,
then a lot of things become just another project.
What could happen? What's the worst thing that could happen?
Right. Well, we call it commander's intent. You know, once you launch a project, it almost never goes according to your outline. But if you know what the ultimate objective is, we used to say, see the hill, take the hill. How you take the hill is up to you, because you don't know which way they're going to start shooting at you.
Right.
And I think that's a good business acumen as well.
So now, how are you kind of leveraging that now in your new role?
Well, it's continued. We've always been big believers in it. About 10% of our franchise owners are veterans, which we want to continue. And it's actually started to increase a little bit more as I've been more involved and more engaged in
But you're part of the VetFran initiative for the IFA?
Right, for the whole industry. There's about 1,600 franchise companies as members of the International Franchise Association. And so we're at just almost half of them that are members of VetFran. But even beyond that, we want it to be a good housekeeping seal, so that franchise companies know that we're not just going to rubber stamp them as a member of VetFran going forward. We want to make sure that veteran's going to actually be joining a very credible, very powerful organization.
Now, do you have kind of some methodology or some process that helps a franchise integrate a veteran into their organization?
Yeah, and what we try and do is talk about some best practices of making sure that they, number one, speak to the veterans. And I know there's a lot of hiring fairs specifically for veteran applicants, and in franchising it's very similar. So we want to make sure that they understand, and we do seminars. I was out in Anaheim a couple weeks ago doing a seminar for veterans that are looking to get into franchising, and they just need to understand. They understand the lingo in the military, so we try and interpret that into business and franchising. A big thing that's number one obstacle is access to capital and credit access. So a lot of these guys and you know, servicemen and women travel a lot, and so they don't have a lot of home equity. They don't have bank relationships. They don't have ways to tap into resources to launch their business. So sometimes it's also helping them through that curve of how do I get it launched and where do I get my money from. And that's a big part of it.
Are there government programs that help them?
Not as many as you'd think. There are some SBA loans, and we've got a really, really strong relationship with the SBA, and that's improving. But there's a couple great companies like Bowfly and Guidant Financial, Benetrends, companies that help and can speak to the veterans about ways to leverage what they have. But, you know, there's a military version of the 401k, so there's ways they can save money. But at the average salary of most of these folks coming in, they're not putting away a lot of money.
Now, is there anything our listeners can do to help veterans' causes or VetFran specifically?
Well, I think the first thing they can do is try and look at your own organization and make sure that you're a veteran-friendly business, whether it's asking, are you a veteran, on the application. And that's something that's really simple to do. And by doing that, you can talk to them about what specific traits or skills they have that you can apply. There's things such as, you know, if people out there are members of an organization or a franchise, having some sort of a veteran incentive or a loyalty program, a customer incentive or discount. You know, there's a lot of different things you can call them. But Veterans Day just passed, and you see a lot of companies that are on the bandwagon to give away a free sandwich on Veterans Day. Right. What are they doing the rest of the year?
Right.
You know, that's a big thing that we talk about is Home Depot and Lowe's, give them credit. You know, they've really revamped, and they give a discount year-round for veterans. And I think that's the way it should be.
Fantastic. All right, so let's get coordinates for our listeners so they can reach out and have a conversation with somebody.
Well, a couple things. So our company is tssphotography.com, and to learn more about VetFran, we just revamped the website and have a toolkit for veterans and a mentorship program at vetfran.com.
All right. Well, nicely done, man. Thanks so much for coming to visit.
Thank you.
You going to hang with us? We got one more guest we're going to talk to.
Wouldn't go anywhere.
All right. What is it with the last names today on the roster? Man, Giglio?
Giglio.
Giglio. Yeah. Okay. All right. Please join me in welcoming the owner of Georgia Life Settlements LLC, Mr. Michael
Giglio.
Giglio.
Perfect.
Hey, you've been very patient. It seems like you've nodded your head quite a bit. I don't know that I caught you taking notes, but you seem to be getting something out of the conversation so far, yeah?
Absolutely. In fact, the veteran piece is near and dear to my heart. I'm a 29-year veteran, and I have spent a lot of time reaching out to veterans groups and organizations. And I just put in one quick pitch while I can. Most folks don't realize there are about 2,000 homeless vets in the Atlanta metro area. And there's this great organization called the Veterans Empowerment Organization that provides transitional housing to homeless vets as well as life skills and vocational skills training to help get those folks back on their feet. And you can find them at www.veogeorgia.org.
Good All job, right. Mike. That was that yeah, wasn't even on done. The sheet. Yeah, that was impressive.
Well, now I can send him an invoice, right?
So because of that, you get to now tell us.
Perfect. Enough of the hard part.
So what are you guys up to?
It's a really a wonderful opportunity to work with seniors. We work in a very special niche within the secondary life insurance market known as life settlements. So what we do is we work with seniors to help them sell life insurance policies they no longer need or no longer can afford to large institutional investors. And here's the kick: for more than the cash surrender value of the policy.
So now, is this a good option for pretty much any senior, or is there a certain type of senior that this works best for?
Sure. It falls into a couple of very clear categories. On one side of the spectrum, you have wealthier clients that over the course of a lifetime, they've accumulated a lot of wealth, and they've purchased a lot of insurance to protect their assets, and they've reached retirement. They're in their 60s, early 70s, and they're looking at their portfolio, and they're starting to realize, wow, I'm carrying a heck of a lot of life insurance that I no longer need. We can help them liquidate it. On the other side of the spectrum, you've got a number of clients in their 60s, 70s, who find themselves ill-prepared for retirement. They're underinvested in their retirement account. They've not prepared for long-term care, but they have a life insurance policy. And what most folks don't understand is that a life insurance policy is an asset. So it's like a house or a car. You can sell it for a profit. The thing that prevents most of us from selling it is we don't have a commercial marketplace to sell it. Seniors actually have a marketplace that can take their policies.
And how'd you get into this business?
Great question. I took a big left turn when I retired. I wanted to do something that actually had a service aspect associated with it. And I see life insurance as kind of one of those necessary evils. It provides peace of mind and is an important asset for families to ensure that loved ones are taken care of in the untimely death of a spouse. So as I got into it, I realized I was one of 10 million life insurance agents out there. So I looked to find a place to specialize. And after a lot of due diligence, a lot of research, settled into life settlements.
So now, is your client typically the senior or is it the kid of the senior?
It can be both. It can be the senior, or it can be an adult child who has a financial power of attorney for a senior that's in, let's say, long-term care and struggling to make ends meet.
Can you share maybe a story about how somebody who worked with you were able to leverage the kind of the benefits?
Sure. Let's talk to the senior and the adult child. A mother who was in advanced stages of dementia in an assisted living facility. The family was going through their assets, and they were forced with a decision: were they going to move to the daughter's assets to help keep her in that facility? And what they didn't realize until we spoke was the mother did, in fact, have a life insurance policy. So we were able to go ahead and take a look at leveraging that in the secondary market.
So now they the adult child had to know that, and then they had to share
that's,
that with
you.
Know,
that's
is that the hard,
absolutely, and that's the
a
hard
tricky part, right? Because they don't even know what they don't know.
Yeah, you think about the conversations you have with your parents, and often you talk about their investment portfolio. You don't necessarily think to ask, well, what about life insurance?
Right. And then do you help the adult child kind of navigate those questions to do it in an elegant manner?
Absolutely.
Because it's kind of a tricky conversation for some kids, right?
It is. And let me offer this. The life settlement as an option becomes very obvious to the client. They've typically reached a place where they either can't afford the premiums anymore, they no longer need it, or they're facing a life situation where they need to liquidate an asset, and this becomes an option that they didn't realize they had.
So if they can't afford it anymore and they stop paying, does it just go away and they get nothing?
Right. That's known as lapsing the policy. So you reach a point where you can no longer afford the premium and you walk away from it. And what most folks also don't understand is term policies, which don't have inherent cash value, for those that have a conversion privilege, we can convert those and sell those as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So I was going to ask, when he was asking who is the client, the kid or the beneficiary, the account holder, whatever. But what about also, don't you probably have some pretty strong relationships with, I don't know, estate planners, financial planners, portfolio
Absolutely.
Managers?
Absolutely. So as I reach out, and what I find is most folks have no idea that this market even exists.
Yeah, I'll bet.
So we work reach out to estate planners, financial planners, CPAs, even independent life insurance agents. They know when their clients are confronting a choice with respect to whether or not to sell or to lapse or to surrender a policy. So it's a great option. We actually work also with elder law attorneys because there are implications that can be associated with a sale of a life insurance policy that could affect Medicaid or veterans benefits. So we're very sensitive to making sure that as we go into this transaction, we're looking at all the possible ramifications and opportunities.
Now, do you find that some of those people that do refer business to you aren't that educated about this, even possibility?
That's a great, great question. Let's take a look at the basic numbers. Over 90% of life insurance policies sold in America don't pay a death benefit. The vast majority of them.
So they lapse?
Well, they either reach the end of the term period,
right.
Or in the case of whole life and universal life policies, permanent policies, over 85% of policies that you purchase to cover your entire life, you surrender. Or lapse. So most Americans have no idea that this option is out there for them.
Wow. That's stunning.
Yeah.
And then, so your objective is to educate them. So that must be your biggest challenge,
that's
right?
That's his whole sales and marketing
cycle, just to have a conversation,
right?
To
that's
educate them of the possibility.
That's why I'm here. you're absolutely right. The short of it is, it's not right for everyone. I think the good news is, in the state of Georgia, it's a very well-regulated marketplace. There are a number of protections in place to ensure that the senior is taken care of as part of this process. And we will be rigorous and thorough in making sure that they understand whether or not this is the right choice for them. We'll involve the beneficiaries and we'll involve their financial planners or estate planners, whomever is going to also have a role to play after the transaction is closed.
Well, you must sleep pretty well at night knowing that you're providing that kind of service for folks, because they could leave an awful lot of money on the table. We're not there yet, we being my wife and I. Well, I mean, in terms of my parents. But I know that time is coming where we're going to have to at least help them navigate some of these waters. We're going to have those conversations. And what I would really like to have is a conversation with his wealth manager, if he has one, and that wealth manager be educated by somebody like you instead of me trying to sell my dad on all these.
No, you're absolutely right. It's one part of a of an individual's investment portfolio, and right. they need to treat it as an asset within that portfolio.
Good stuff. So if somebody wanted to learn more, website for you guys?
Sure. It's www.georgialifesettlements.com.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you.
This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.